In today's show, we have Ron Dagdag. He is a Microsoft MVP in Dallas, Texas. I met Ron while working together with a manufacturer in Texas. And today we're going to talk about how developers are innovating using augmented reality and IoT.
If you're ready to learn how technology is driving business innovation in Cincinnati and beyond, you're tuned in to the right podcast. Join us for interviews and discussions with business leaders, innovators, and visionaries. With our host, Sam Schutze, CEO of Unstoppable Software. This is Unstoppable Talk.
Ron, welcome to the show.
Hello.
So thanks for being on. Maybe a good place to start is tell us a little bit about what you do, how you got started, and how you got into that field.
I've always been fascinated with technology. Even ever since I was a kid, started programming in high school in my hometown, 5 hours north of Manila, Philippines. Mm-hmm. And we don't have internet back then in our hometown, so I would rent computers per hour, a computer per hour, to do some programming and to explore GW Basic back then. And then I got into computer science, started, and then moved here to the U.S. Back in 2000. You know, most of my career is in manufacturing, automating different processes from sales to shop floor to delivery.
Gotcha. And you said you rent a computer by the hour, so you would go to like a internet shop and go in there. Okay, interesting.
We don't have internet back then, so
yeah.
It's really just computers.
Oh, yes, just a computer. Okay. And did you get your degree over there or here?
Yes, I got my degree in the Philippines.
Okay, great. And so now you are a Microsoft MVP. So maybe for our listeners, explain a little bit about what that is and sort of the specific areas you're interested in that you were awarded that for.
Microsoft MVP is an award that's given to communities, to developers or to technologists because they organized events or they share their knowledge to the community and their technical expertise. Anything gotcha. Related to Microsoft technologies, and then this is my third year to receive this award.
Okay.
I usually speak at conferences, write blogs, organize events here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area.
Okay. And what are the specific areas you have that for?
Related to Windows development. Windows development is not just a laptop or desktop anymore. If you think about it, there's augmented reality side of Windows, which is the HoloLens, and also the Internet of Things side of Windows, which is the IoT core and such.
Gotcha. And the HoloLens is the goggles that they have produced, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
And they just came out with a new version of that recently, didn't they?
Yes, they came out with a new version of HoloLens 2 that has hand tracking.
Gotcha.
Which I'm excited about.
Interesting. So maybe let's talk a little bit about some of the background of augmented reality. Can you explain for folks what that is and what are kind of the different types of augmented reality or that spectrum?
Augmented reality, virtual reality, if you think about it, there's a virtuality continuum. I mean, if you can imagine on the left side of things is, where reality is. And then on the right side of a diagram is virtual. Mm-hmm. So reality is where we live, right? We see it every day. We experience it every day. Virtual reality, on the other side of the spectrum, is everything is computer generated, right? Mm-hmm. It's all, and you wear a headset and it's all occluded. And you can only see what is generated by the computer. So in between that, there is mixed reality. And that's where the lies between the augmented reality and augmented virtuality is. So augmented reality is you can see the real world and you're adding some experiences based from, some computer graphics on top of what the reality is using a device. Like it's kind of like the HoloLens. And also there's the augmented virtuality is where you're pulling in some information from the real world inside virtual reality.
Okay. What's a good example, textbook example of one of those experiences you might do in those environments?
So augmented reality Pokemon Go would be a good example of that one, right? Because mm-hmm. you can see from the camera of your phone and be able to see, you know, the reality at the same time, have some graphics or some models that you can actually interact with.
Gotcha.
And then on the virtual reality side, you know, Oculus Rift, Oculus Go would be a good experience because you wear this headset and these goggles and be able to have a different experience. It transports you to a different, you know, it can take you anywhere. That's mm-hmm. that's how I see virtual reality. Augmented reality is something that can bring stuff to you, to your world, right? Virtual reality is something that can take you anywhere you want to. So if I say, I want to be in a certain place, I want to experience a certain place, like, you know, in a video game, then it can take you there. It feels like you're there.
Gotcha. That's a good way to look at it. Yeah. I mean, you know, it's adding to you the real world, the existing world, versus just taking you to an entirely different world.
That's correct. Yes.
Interesting. Yeah. And I know folks are using augmented reality a lot now for doing things such as inspections is a real common case. I saw a presentation not long ago of a oil refinery company using it to provide information sort of, you know, within view during inspections, for instance. So I think it's something that's taking off more and more in the industry. How did you first sort of get into these technologies and use that sort of passion you've got for it to win the MVP award?
One of the things that I was interested in back 4 years ago, you know, back in 2015, when I first saw where they released the HoloLens, right? And there's mm-hmm. this experience between, an IoT device and then someone's wearing the HoloLens and there was a robot on top of an Internet of Things device. And inspired me to kind of see that the convergence between augmented reality and also machine learning and Internet of Things, how it would change the way we interact with software and how it would impact our daily lives. You know, it's changing to where it's not just keyboard and mouse anymore. Mm-hmm. You know, you remember, you know, back a few years ago, you know, it started with touchscreens and, you know, now it's voice, right?
Yeah.
And voice and smart home devices. And then even hand gestures, you know, like Kinect, you know, and then now the new devices that are coming up, you know, the virtual reality devices have hand tracking and also eye tracking.
And so how are companies kind of implementing and using those from a practical standpoint to sort of realize value for business problems and for projects they're working on?
Like these days, you know, you see a lot of applications for touchscreens, right? iPads being deployed in the field, right? Mm-hmm. Being able to use the sensors that is on those smart tablets. And then nowadays, a lot of homes have started to have voice-enabled systems, right? Mm-hmm. Be able to control. And if you just want a simple command or, you know, simple question that you can ask. And eventually, offices may need these. If I don't have to pull a laptop, if I can ask Alexa or Google, you know, what's my sales going on today? Mm-hmm. Those kind of things. And in terms of, you know, the computer is moving from desktop or from moving from offices towards the people that does not have access to computers or technology, not technologically, but it's harder for them to access computers, like people in the field, right? Mm-hmm. People that are in drilling or oil and gas companies, or people that are in manufacturing or in the shop floor, where technically it's harder for them, you know, because they need both of their hands to mm-hmm. be able to work on device and or on something, right? Mm-hmm. Or on their jobs.
Yeah, it seems like to me like really the whole thing is about accessing the information you need in the right place at the right time, you know? I mean, if you look at voice assistants, that's for when you may not have your laptop booted up or want to pull your phone out and type and search. You know, it's, can I ask, there's a certain portion of information you can access via a voice question, right? Mm-hmm. And not everything, but there are key things.
Yes.
And there are solutions I've been seeing come to market that integrate more with enterprise databases, you know, ERP systems and whatnot, that you can ask Alexa, hey, you know, how many widgets did we sell last week? And it will tell you.
Yes.
You know, and then, there, of course, there's other information that you need to see with your eyes while you're looking at a, you know, a circuit breaker or something.
Right.
You know, you don't want to get your laptop out and try to find the picture or pull the PDF up at that point.
That's correct.
So, you know, there's another portion that, you know, you need to compare to the real world, right?
Yes.
So it's all just about what is the best way to sort of consume that information, and can we get closer to it?
And I just also want to add, like, cameras in the, you know, for safety zones, right? Mm. And that's another extra sensor that can help someone, you know, like the, you know, the cameras, you know, the person detection or people detection or something that would also listen to sound. One thing that use case that I've heard or looked at is being able to detect if there's something wrong with the sawmill, you know, and if there's something wrong with that device, and be able to detect that up front before it's bad, you know, before an accident happens or something like that.
Yeah. Well, and of course, feeding all that sort of visual information into a machine learning algorithm that can, you know, not just react to the obvious problems, but sort of the other data points that indicate a trend.
Yeah, that's why it's really neat that the convergence between augmented reality and machine learning and Internet of Things, they're all coming together to produce different types of products that actually can make a difference in, you know, in terms of productivity, changing lives, safety, security.
Mm-hmm. And when you're looking at projects like this, or for projects you've been involved in, you know, what do you think the best practices are for starting up, you know, the initial stages of a project like this? You know, how do you execute those? And where are some of the sort of sticking points where a project might struggle or fall flat?
Sometimes, you know, in every project that I've looked at, you know, finding the flow first of how the interaction happens. Sometimes, you know, being able to figure out what the goal and what the value it can bring to the business.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I like building proof of concept.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sometimes that can be throwaway code, but it kind of gives you a reference to understand the whole problem. And that's why I enjoy, you know, attending hackathons. And even in just a few weekends, you have something that might not necessarily, you know, ready for production, but it shows you the value and ways to explore that idea, if it's worth pursuing or not.
Gotcha. What are some of the most interesting things you've built at a hackathon?
Few things that I've interested about is how you would, there's one project that I've worked on where I can, inside virtual reality, kind of control a rover. So, you know, just thinking about how you would be able to remotely control a rover inside virtual reality, and then be able to bring cameras inside virtual reality, or what the robot is seeing, or what the rover is seeing, is sent up to inside virtual reality.
Just sort of like a remote control car.
Kind of like a remote control car. Those kind of things.
Interesting. What are some of the biggest ways that technology, sort of all in this area, has impacted companies you've worked with?
For me, it's lately I've been working with voice assistants, you know, AI smart voice assistants, like, you know, Amazon Echo and also Google Home. And I've noticed that the rise of containers, serverless computing, machine learning, Internet of Things, and also computing at the edge. And that's what I've been, how it's impacting how you develop in these technologies now. So one of the examples I'm seeing at is because these AI assistants, you know, they're actually running serverless computing at the end. They're all where the cloud provider runs on the server and dynamically manages the allocation of resources. And it's the idea that you only pay what you use. And it's become, you know, I don't know if you've noticed lately, computing is becoming a utility company. It's just like a utility company where where it's not like you're buying a bunch of servers and installing it to your you know, having IT and your team install it in house, but you're actually renting computers.
Yeah.
And now it's even more is you're renting just the time that you use it, that you run these functions.
Well, or that you're just renting the specific sort of functions.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, and I think that's the interesting thing about that when you talk about serverless and, you know, containerization and everything else. You know, if you can, for instance, if you look at DigitalOcean, you know, they have a completely managed database platform. Mm-hmm. Just give me a database connection and that's all I need. I don't worry about the server. I don't worry about anything. And you know, those pieces of it, managing, you know, a Linux server and administering a Linux server are the things that typically a lot of developers struggle the most with and also just don't really want to have to do. Because it's not, you're not creating anything when you're, you know, dealing with that sort of administration, right?
Yes. And
of course, usually that means maybe you have to have somebody who's an expert in that stuff to do it, you know, for larger companies. But, you know, it's like if I can just point and click and the database just works, that is a huge time saver. I've been migrating a bunch of stuff to the cloud recently, so it definitely hits home for me. What are some interesting applications of machine learning you've seen in terms of what kind of models you've seen being used and such?
One of the things that I've, you know, been seeing lately is in terms of having pre-trained models that exist out there, mm-hmm. and using, you know, and just adding it to your existing system. One of the things that I've been working on lately is being able to use, like, for custom vision. I want something that I can customize. Pre-trained models out there to do computer vision stuff. Mm-hmm. So if I don't have billions and billions of pictures to detect, you know, if this item, you know, in this case, I'm trying to say if it's, you know, hot dog or not hot dog, right? So you have pictures of hot dog and pictures of not hot dog, and how you classify those, and being able to use a pre-trained model and customize it to train and build new models for me. And one of the great things about that I see where the serverless computing and containerization is being able to rent the, you know, just rent the train, you know, where you do your training up in the cloud, mm-hmm. and then being able to manage and run the models at the edge, right? Being able to deploy it locally on the computer or in a Raspberry Pi or in an IoT scenario.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. And what about IoT? I mean, what kind of devices and use cases have you seen there that are interesting recently?
In the IoT, I've noticed that there's more need for running your models, you know, running your device or being able to deploy it locally. So managing the deployment side. I'm seeing more and more technologies that helps you deploy it easily and making it more secure. Because that's one of the things that are important in IoT devices, right? How do you safeguard connected devices and networks in the Internet of Things world, right?
Yeah.
And one of the things that I've noticed is being able to easily update and deploy from the cloud to the edge device, to the Internet of Things device.
Yeah.
Let's take a quick break. This podcast is sponsored by Unstoppable Software, a Cincinnati-based technology consulting firm. At Unstoppable Software, we bolt on to your company's team and accelerate their ability to deliver custom software development projects. With our deep experience in manufacturing, engineering, and healthcare, we can tailor systems for process improvement, data analytics, machine learning, and document workflow, so they become a user-friendly, perfect fit for your employees and the way they want to work. To learn more about how we make our clients unstoppable, visit us at unstoppablesoftware.com or call us at 513-382-8499. And now, back to Unstoppable Talk.
I I always feel like there's an issue with the sort of data gathering of IoT devices, where oftentimes these things just get set up and sort of just pumped into a table somewhere. But the actual table structure that it will populate is usually not great, you know. And then you end up with millions of pieces of data in a sort of really flat table. And I think part of that is just the tools allow you to do stuff that almost lets you be a little too powerful if you're not a database designer, right?
That's true. I mean, you were talking about, you know, like a database in the cloud a while ago, right? And lately I've been seeing where I can deploy on a container that database to my Internet of Things device as a container. The containerization of Internet of Things. And that, for me, that was interesting how I can, as a developer, I can create a container, right? For my application, I can create a container for my database. And when I deploy it, I can deploy it in the cloud. And at the same time, I can find a way to deploy it now to an Internet of Things device as a container.
Interesting. So it's actually running on the device.
On the device. Yeah. So in terms of code,
to upload somewhere.
In terms of code, what I'm shipping that runs on my computer would be able to run on one of the Internet Things device if the device is capable of running that payload or that load.
Yeah, and I think and what is Microsoft doing in space as far as that ability to run, you know, say C# code on some of these devices? What have they sort of put into place that helps with that?
One of the things I'm seeing is the .NET Core. .NET Core 3.0 is being released at the end of this month. Actually, sometime next week. But being able to be cross-platform, that it does not, it's not just Windows devices anymore, that it can also run in Linux devices. So these devices like Raspberry Pi or some of the gateways that can run these Linux devices.
Yeah, which would be pretty huge. Save a lot of time. Yes. What about some of the sort of trends in the economy that are driving, that affecting these technologies, in terms of IoT? What are some things that are happening that are affecting people's decisions?
Lots of the IoT projects, I've noticed that they're focusing more in security and how do you safeguard these devices that are connected to the internet. One of wake up call for everyone is the Mirai botnet. It is a malware that infects smart IoT devices and turning them to a zombie or a bot that can be controlled remotely by someone else. And so, and typically a botnet is often used for a DDoS attack or denial of service attack. So security has changed the way we looked at these devices.
And I'm not super familiar with that particular botnet, but I guess, essentially the lesson is folks just left their devices wide open, I imagine.
Yes.
Because of this challenge, any project we're working on, we see a challenge of sort of, getting a proper network access or getting too much access that it's wide open. And people came in and took advantage of it.
Yeah. Sometimes some port is open that was not, that was not secured. And those things we need to look at and be able to make sure that the security is important in it.
Gotcha. So what are outside of IoT and augmented reality, what are some other sweet spots and areas you've been sort of investigating and you're excited about?
Well, that AI smart assistance, if you think about it, because of that technology, I started to use, I'm really happy about serverless architecture. That, you would often hear the term function as a service. At the end of the day, whenever you hear the word serverless, there is a server somewhere. It's just it's hidden from the developer. Essentially, what you're saying to your cloud provider is that, hey, here's my code. Run it somewhere in your cloud. I don't care where you run it. Just run it for me. And it would execute. Mm-hmm. And so that's one of the things that I'm really excited about, how it's changing the way we do development.
Gotcha. Okay. What are, as far as projects you've been working on, what do you think, what's one of the most personally rewarding projects that you've worked on recently?
Lately, I've been speaking at conferences about machine learning and IoT. And I really enjoy when that aha moment or that spark on someone where their mind is blown away with all these different technologies that I'm talking about.
Yeah.
And the possibilities and what it would bring. Lately, I've been talking about machine learning and the difference between a data scientist and a data engineer. You think about it in machine learning or artificial intelligence. When do you need a data scientist and when do you need a data engineer? Data scientist usually is your best baker in town. If you know, they create secret recipes for your cakes or your pastries, and they try different ingredients to make the best cake. Data engineers, or typically software engineers, are the ones that are expert in building a bakery. They know how to deliver fresh bread to the customer. How do you, where do you source the ingredients? You know, which oven to use when you're building that bakery, or and where do you put the cash register in? And and I think that's where the value of AI and machine learning projects would come from, is once we started integrating it to our to our businesses.
Yeah. Well, and it's interesting because, of course, any AI model is only as good as the data you feed it.
That's
so
correct.
You know, if you have a data scientist building an amazing model, but the information it's receiving is not real world, it's useless or at least weakened.
Yeah, and also, you know, based from the data that we're collecting, and there's that feedback loop, right? So let's say we started the bakery and we're getting bad reviews from our customers, right? Or bad data from our customers, we can send that back to the data scientist or to the baker and said, give me a better recipe. Mm-hmm. And that would help them. It's a feedback loop for them and say, hey, this ingredient didn't work. This combination didn't work. Let's try a different one.
Okay. Yeah. And when you're speaking on these topics, you mentioned you're doing some speaking engagements around this. What's sort of your approach to, or what do you think works well to speak to an audience? You know, you're talking about a group of people that may not know a lot about these things. And like you said, it's kind of blowing their mind. How do you, you know, do you give examples? Is that part of your sort of approach, giving real world examples like this, or, you know, metaphors or?
Yeah, metaphors, analogies, sometimes.
Yeah, analogies.
That's pretty much how I learn about certain technology. It's like, how does it fit in the real world, right? I mean, at the end of the day, whenever you're building a software system, you're actually you're just not necessarily copying, but you're actually extending how the business works, how the communication in a business, right? How they communicate, and you're actually just making it faster for them to communicate. You know, that's why you have all the, it's depending on how the business communicates with each other. And that's typically how you create your workflows or your ETL, right? Or your transfer, load transfer, right? And how you send data from one to the other. It's communication between one side of the business to the other side of the business. And if they change their communication model or the way they communicate, then your program would change accordingly.
Yeah.
Or sometimes you're introducing new ways on how they would communicate. So that's typically how I would explain. I would look for different ways on how can I create analogies, or how I would be able to give examples on how it is in the real world. One example that I'm talking about is like McDonald's versus Subway. You know, we were talking about machine learning. And between the data scientists and data engineers, right? And what is the cloud and what is the edge? A lot of people are kind of confused the difference between what is the, you know, when do you deploy it in the cloud and when do you deploy your program at the edge? And my analogy on that is, you know, McDonald's, right? McDonald's, where do they buy their bread, right? Where do they cook their bread? Typically, they cook it offsite, you know, mm-hmm. gets delivered to them at the store.
At a bigger factory or something.
Right. Yeah. And compared to Subway, right, where they, you know, they bake the bread in the restaurant and mm-hmm. and that's where, the way I see it, that's where the edge is, you know. And there's a difference depending on the need, right? Mm-hmm. In case of McDonald's, they're working on make sure that it's consistent mm-hmm. offsite. And so they have a big company or they have a supplier that send them that information or they send them the bread. Mm-hmm. But in Subway scenario, we're baking your bread at the edge, you have the capability to adjust and give fresh bread to your customers, right? So depending on how fast you want to break the, you want to be able to adjust how to service your customer, makes a difference.
Well, and I think you're right, because, you know, if you look at that example, part of the reason they do that is because Subway is all about, you know, it being a custom experience every time and such, which is also sort of lines up with the idea of when you would sort of do edge computing. You know, whereas like you said, at McDonald's, you know, a Big Mac anywhere in the world is always exactly the same, but yes. Probably any particular Subway club is only always slightly different every time you get it, right? You know, being able to handle those sort of exceptions, you might think of it.
Yeah, and the way you can customize it because...
Yeah.
You know, having it on the edge, the restaurant knows the capabilities or how much traffic they're going to have. Mm-hmm. And so they can plan ahead or plan because, you know, they know they're going to have this much customers around lunchtime. Mm-hmm. And so they would bake bread accordingly. But McDonald's, once they run out of bread at the store, they're not going to sell that product anymore until the next delivery.
Well, I think the costs make sense in that analogy too, right? Because obviously... Subway's, you know, baking costs, if they're doing it at the edge, are always going to be a lot higher than if they did it in one central location, just because of economies of scale and stuff. And they would, you know what I mean, having to buy ovens for every location, so on and so forth. I mean, you know, it's a good analogy, I think, for sure.
Yeah. In terms of cost, sometimes it gets expensive also to you know, if I'm doing computer vision, right? Mm-hmm. If I send my images up to the cloud versus I send my images... you know, locally, it's cheaper because once I bought the oven, it's just there, you know, I can just cook it every day and, you know, be able to process the data or, you know, process the, you know, make bread every day. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? But if I have to send it to the cloud, I have a third party that I'm ordering every time. Right.
Yeah.
And that can get expensive depending on contracts. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense?
And transportation and everything else.
And so there's, you know, in terms of traffic-wise, sometimes it's you know, what if there's a bad weather and you can't get the bread delivered on time?
Well, and it's interesting, too, because I imagine if you think about how that sort of translates to the computer vision, AI, and machine learning models world. So if you had, you know, terabytes of images on the edge mm-hmm. that you were pumping into your local AI model... And then taking that, you know, moving the sort of training for that model into the cloud, yes. right, from there. Well, now you don't have to move all those images every day or something. You know, you just have to move the sort of the learning, basically, right? And of course, you know, if you're a company that has 100 sites, you know, you don't have to have 100 sites all gathering terabytes of images. You could just do one as long as what they were doing was all the same, right?
Yeah.
Essentially, so... Yeah, definitely affects. I mean, these little unique sort of use cases, you've got to get that right, I think, because you can make, you know, it throws off the return on investment if the way that you deploy and architect a system is just way too expensive, right?
Yeah. And there's just also use cases like, you know, if you have a oil and gas, mm-hmm. right? If you think about that. It's too expensive to send data to an offsite, right? Mm-hmm. it has to be processed locally because, you know, they're using satellite to connect to the internet.
Because they're out in the middle of nowhere.
Because they are in the middle of nowhere.
Yeah.
So it just makes sense to just send your secret formula or, you know, I call it your models down to the edge devices rather than sending each image or send each data to the cloud to be processed.
Yeah, it's interesting for solutions such as that. You know, you think about oil wells that because of their remoteness and the sort of like heavy industrial use, they probably have been pretty limited in sort of the ways or amount that they've been able to deploy technology for solutions until we're sort of getting to this point, right? Because if your only option before was to build some sort of embedded device that ran, you know, microcode and whatever, because, you know, you wouldn't be able to have a PC sitting there running on a generator, you know, with no cellular connection. I mean, there's all sorts of limitations, right? But if you can put, like you said, a battery powered Raspberry Pi, right? That it's running, in particular running code that's easy to maintain, such as, you know, .NET code or .NET Core. Well, now there's a whole lot of things you can do cheaply, right?
Yes. So, but in terms of deployment, one of the things you have to think about when you're deploying, workloads up in the edge versus the cloud, right? The cloud, when you deploy it, you know, there's only maybe hundreds of places where you would deploy it, right? You deploy in the cloud, you can easily scale it up there. But if you're going to deploy it in the edge, you're thinking about thousands or millions of devices that you're deploying to. So that's one of the things you also have to consider. So if you think about, you know, the McDonald's versus Subway, you know, McDonald's only have to talk to a few vendors to deliver them the bread, right? And make sure that one is, you know, that they cook the bread or they bake the bread, but up to that certain standard. But in terms of, you know, each restaurant and training each person, right, to bake the bread properly. So that it's up to standard, that can mean cost too.
Sure. Yeah, I imagine a restaurant such as Subway probably does have a lot more training costs, you know, than McDonald's for their employees, kind of for that same reason, right? Interesting. Well, so Ron, what are tell us a little bit about some of the upcoming speaking events that you'll be doing in the next few months here.
I will be speaking at Fort Worth .NET User Group. I am actively speaking. I have a lot of speaking engagement around the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And I will be speaking also at Liberty.js in Philadelphia this October.
Okay. And what is Liberty.js? What is that event about?
It's a conference, a lot of JavaScript development over there too. But I will be speaking about WebUSB, WebMIDI, and also Web Bluetooth, how you can connect your Chrome browser directly to a Bluetooth device or directly to a USB device without needing to install device drivers.
Interesting. Okay. And what's the best way for folks to contact you if they want to learn more about what you're working on or pick your brain about any ideas you've got?
You can easily contact me via Twitter at @RonDagDag. Also on LinkedIn, if you type in ron.dagdag.net, it would point to my LinkedIn profile. So ron.dagdag.net is the best way to contact me.
Okay. And that's D-A-G-D-A-G.
Yes. That's great.
Well, Ron, thanks so much for coming on the show and talking to us about these technologies that are sort of at the edge of augmented reality and IoT and what you've seen people doing with it. It's been great to see sort of the reputation and exposure you've gained over the last few years by really putting a lot of your own time, personal time, into this to help educate users in the community. So you should be applauded for that for sure.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, and thank you, and have a good one.
You too.
Thank you for tuning in to Unstoppable Talk. We hope you enjoyed today's podcast. If you did, be sure to support the show by leaving a 5-star review on iTunes. and learn more about this show by heading over to unstoppablesoftware.com. Until next time, keep innovating.